who go and observe children, no? That was only on full moon day. Old people, old women, old men, they do that. You see that? But the other people, they do not chat about the poor holiday for Buddhist religious activity, they don't do that. They sometimes set apart those days for certain things which are entirely gift-driven. Gambling and cattle lifting and various other things.
No, I was wondering, whether this open association of members of the government,
yes,
that is to say ministers,
yes,
in religious ceremonies as a part of government activity, you see, when they are opening a school,
mm-hmm,
or whether that doesn't give a Buddhism the appearance of being a state religion.
Well, actually it's only a place, in a place where the children of that area happen to be at least 90 to 95% Buddhist,
mm,
that Buddhist observances, but the Christian, really Christian religious observances,
mm-hmm,
it's a Muslim area, it's a Muslim. Suppose you have to school in Muslim village, there's no point in going and doing that to go to Buddhist sites,
mm-hmm,
you see. They don't understand, and they resent it.
But now, for instance, there is a practice of every new Prime Minister,
yes,
going to visit Dalai Lama and Gava, then there are certain government activities which are undertaken by the Department of Cultural,
yes,
Affairs, which would seem to suggest that Buddhism is a state religion. Doesn't the department give money to certain city owners to restore the buildings and all?
Well, it certainly gives the appearance of Buddhism in a state religion, but then it's like this. A Supreme Court judge, when he holds decisions, if it's a Roman Catholic, he goes to a Roman Catholic church. If it's a Church of England, he goes to a Church of England church. Not only recently, even the earlier days, you see, from the time that Buddhists got into the Supreme Court bench, you see, Sir Louis Vijayavadana, he was, I think, one of the earliest Buddhists who got into the Supreme Court bench. He used to attend service in the temple before he takes on decisions. You see, when he goes out, he does that. Christians used to go do this. Similarly, when a Buddhist becomes the governor general, he will go to Dalai Lama and govern and observe him. You see, because that is his, he has got to take his oath and he has got to accept office under certain circumstances. He has got to stay strictly in his own conscience that he is going to do full justice. Therefore, he takes, in addition to the affirmation he takes in the Queen's House, he goes to Dalai Lama and takes an oath there also. But if the Governor General or the Prime Minister and the Prime Minister, the same thing, happens to be a Christian, he will do it. There is no compulsion in this country today that anybody becoming the Governor General or Prime Minister, he must go to Janata Mali Gawa and accept office from there.
If I may take up another sphere, the industry loan question.
Yes.
Was the cabinet consulted before the Sri Mao Shastri Pact was signed?
Signed?
Yes.
No, because for this reason, there's no time to consult the cabinet to sign there. Mm-hmm. But she discussed the matters with the cabinet before she went, discussed the matters with the cabinet, and within those certain limits, she could have come to an agreement. So when she went there, Felix Dash went there, Ilangaratta went there with her, and some other officials and others went there. So she was at liberty, cabinet gave her sanction to sign, arrive at a suitable pact within those frameworks.
Mm-hmm. What was the framework that you suggested?
Framework was that as many of them, you must get the position of the Indian government of this. They said these people are here, Indian laborers are here. You see, you can do anything you want to do with them, we can't accept. That was their position. Mm-hmm. That's what I think a man like Desai, that's what he was saying. That's what earlier Patel, but he was saying the same thing. So our position is to make these people accept at least a certain number of these people as Indian citizens.
Mm-hmm.
These people were in no man's land, you see, sort of thing. So we had to, our job is to to get the Indian government to accept the position and see that they are, that as many of the Indian citizens, the Indians who are here are repatriated as Indian citizens, they must give, confirm Indian citizenship on those people. That was the framework. Mm-hmm.
And were you satisfied with the arrangement that was reached when you came back with this fact?
Well, we would have liked, if they were able to persuade the Indian government to accept more Indians from here, it's a question of numbers. Mm-hmm. So under the circumstances, of course, you can't say that we are satisfied.
It was 4:7, wasn't it?
Yes.
And do you think that what the present government is doing is in terms of that fact?
Yes, I think in their mind, certain things that they have done is within the past. But the implementation bill they brought in, there are certain loopholes to India. Because, you see, we register Indian citizens here,
right?
But that registration does not depend upon the number of Indians who are accepted there. We go register it here. And the Indian government says that we are going to make arrangements there for settling these people. So that the thing, one doesn't depend on the other. That is going independent, this goes independent. So that is not very satisfactory.
So you feel that according to what the UNP have done recently, while the thing is defined, so many are Sudanese, so many Indians, the fact is that the Indian citizens can remain in Ceylon.
Yes,
they are not forcibly repatriated.
Yes,
sir.
Yes. We oppose the implementation bill. Yeah.
But don't you think the UNP have been wiser? Now, you get 4 Indians made Ceylon citizens. Other 7 are made Indians. They're still here, the 7. And now this is according to the fact. But now, what they can do is, if they feel that we need the 7, because we need labor, right, we let them wait here, but they're Indian citizens.
That's right.
So the moment we feel they're not necessary,
the moment
we feel
the
country does not need these 7 Indian citizens, we can pass a law and say,
it's okay.
So we can force them out.
We can do that. There is that, of course. Mm-hmm. Right.
And also there is a danger now that if all these 700,000 Indians go to India, they'll want to take their money with them. Mm-hmm. And that will create certain monetary difficulties, won't it?
Right.
With reference to these Indian citizens who are made Indian immigrants, who are made Sudanese citizens, do you feel they should be given separate constituencies or should they be allowed to vote in their area?
That's a difficult question. Very difficult. Once you grant Ceylon citizenship, of course, with regard to certain matters, the question to be asked, are you a citizen by descent or by registration? You see, that is a certain difference that might be made. But generally, in everything, to make a distinction between a citizen by descent and citizen by status, I suppose in political matters, they'll have to give the same privileges as
same consequences. Perhaps they could have the system they had earlier of multi-member.
Yeah. I think there is some provision made in the agreement about that. It would be a difficult job to put in separate compartments. It can be done, it's a good thing. It's a good thing if it can be done. Because they can, whatever it is, they will always go as Indians. So that people like Tondaman and others can always control them. So it's a danger is there.
But isn't it a fact that in the Pasdun Koral area, including Horana, and in some Sabaragama district, the Indian workers and the Sinhalese workers, or even the Sinhalese villagers, are fairly close together. They don't vote on communal lines. They are a bit more socialist and leftist.
In Indian?
In those areas.
In Horan area, they don't. They don't because they can't. But there are only a few. For every Indian, there may be about 100 Sinhalese.
So you think they don't follow Tarnamal?
No. But there are certain areas where especially up country area, some constituencies like Maskelia, Walapane, Maturata, Hangurangpeta, Nuwarelia, and Kadugannava, and places like that, you see, Indians can throw them to one side, you can make the person. They may not be, I don't know whether by themselves they could elect a member in any particular country. I don't think so. But they certainly can be in such a position as to throw some authority, some weight on the side of people, like on side of their leader, like Tarnamal. You see, if a member wants to get elected to Mathurata, for instance, or to Kosland, or to Kotmali or somewhere, then that person might have to be under obligation to Tarnamal.
What factors led Mr. Tarnamal to vote against the SLSP in 1965?
For that?
Tarnamal's party.
Yeah.
Why did they vote against the SLSP in 1965?
Because they found that we were not out to accommodate them, in all of them. We were definitely out to send out all Indians as we possibly could. Tarnamal was not prepared to send out a single Indian. He said so in Parliament.
And he was opposed to the Sirimaa's
charter act? Yes, he was opposed to the fact. And he said in Parliament that under this fact, that not a single Indian will leave this country. I will see to that. That's one thing, and the other thing is, they must have felt that they could get some privileges from the UNP and none from us.
Is it correct to say that whereas in 1956 a fair number of Muslims voted for the SLSP,
yes,
in 65 the Muslims by and large were more for the UNP?
Yes.
How was that?
That is because Muslims are generally UNP. They're all capitalists. They're all capitalists. They have got other vested interests, and they want to protect those things. And generally, there are a few, extremely few, who are on the left, who are on the socialist side. But generally, they are UNP. SLFP did a lot for the Muslims as a community, or for their education, things like that. But they forgot everything when the UNP came.
But isn't it true to say that even our Buddhist priesthood, the bhikkhus, in some ways are capitalist UNP oriented, because the Buddhist priesthood, aren't they UNP oriented? Aren't they, in a sense, capitalist minded in that they have this property, this temple property,
yes,
and therefore they wouldn't like a full scale socialist policy?
All the people who are supporting the UNP today are with capitalists. They may be not only the landowners, but the physicians, people like Malavana priest, who has got the dispensary, the man who manufactures a lot of drugs and sells them, you see, very wealthy man, people like that.
What about Maliban?
What about?
I thought he is for the SLS, Maliban.
Maliban okay?
No, Biscuit.
Business, huh? No, the not SLS. Because he helped the SLS also because of this. When they started the biscuit business, you see, when we came in the first year, we imposed an embargo on the imported biscuit. That is only 30% of demand. Second year, reduced that. Third year, we abolished importation altogether. That helped us. So because of that, it helped us a little, but that's not the healthy.
No.
Oh, it's
not Gunasena, they were with you,
yeah,
but they have left.
Yeah. It's a personal matter, not politics. Yeah, definitely. Now, people like MD Gunasena, they are also big business. They are entirely UNP. You see? Now, because our government was were saying that when these people, these private booksellers are making a lot of money on textbooks, and they are dictating any price they want, because it's not the poor people cannot afford it. Therefore, government wants to start on the publication of textbooks. That is why they went against us. Now this government did the same thing in a very much bigger way than we ever did.
Now people say that in 1956, the SLSP had the support of a lot of certain sections of the Sangha, of the Buddhist priesthood,
yes.
In 1956.
Yes.
But didn't the UNP also have support from certain sections?
Didn't the government?
No, in 1956, Sir Johnstone, everyone speaks about the support which the SLSP got from the ex-Archbishop Pirumala and from the priest.
Yes.
But didn't the UNP also have priests on their platform?
Oh yes, quite a lot. Because the why they say it, in the SLSP time, they organized into a sort of a association.
And went round.
But actually, SLSP officially knew nothing at all about it. But they did support. They support for this season, where the country was thoroughly sick of Sir John Kodarama's government. Thoroughly sick. That is why.
In 1965, however, would it be correct to say that the priests also were polarized? There were two sections, one for the SLSP, one for the UNP, more clearly.
Yes.
In recently,
what is it?
In 65,
yes.
Don't you feel that even the priests have got divided?
Oh yes.
On two party lines.
It got divided. It got divided. Now some of the big speakers like Devamotta, Amaravanta,
But that's because he is CPD Silva's community.
Now don't repeat that. Can't you say that? He is Buddhist priest only by name.
But he was chucked out of his post as a teacher in some school, wasn't he? And he got annoyed because of that torture.
Because of that torture. Malavana priest. Yes, he has been meant from the very beginning. Never been anything but UNP.
But were there any other priests who, like Amaravansa, switched?
Oh, yes. Mirisri Gunaratana, another priest. He is speakers all around. And there was one Thalpa, somebody, I forgot his name. He was a celebrity. Then he was a celebrity. After the Mr. Vandaranaike's assassination, all generally, the Buddhist priests had no place in the country immediately after that. You see, everybody went on discussing every Buddhist priest. So much so, I think a very, very curious incident. Mr. Bandaranaike's funeral, I was in charge of the whole arrangement. So we had to get down the priest. There are three Nikayas in Sri Lanka, you know. I wanted to get down priests from all three Nikayas. I wanted to get down some priests from Kandy, various patients. Now people from Kandy had to be given their dana here. They had to come early morning. I arranged with them the dana at a certain temple, not far away from Koragola, from under Naika's place. So, they had been arranged. Then, about a day or two after the funeral arrangement, Buddhist priest came back. What is this, sir? You see, all the priests were, the promises were made to Buddhist priests that they would be all fed. But the priests who were in such and such place, and they were to be given their midday meal, no rice was available. Very little rice was available, and we had to, it was only bread that was served. I got rather angry. So I just entrusted the matter to a certain person and asked him to do it with the help of the marketing department. I summoned the man. And he said, what's the meaning of it? What has happened? Then he told me a serious story. But you know, sir, the rice was cooked in certain places. Then this curries were also cooked, some in the temple, some in other places. When the rice was being transported to the temple to be served to the priests, the people made it, all these priests, what Nanipadipi, they are the people who murdered the, our prime minister, they got out the rice and the appropriate the rice. Feeling of the British was so strong at that time. And it took some time for them to die out.
Yeah, but why did Thalpa Villa feel once the cross over?
Siddhavanta sort of, after that, Siddhavanta took back seat, you see. He didn't attend meetings or anything like that. And then he was a great friend of Buddharatana. Very great friend of Buddharatana. Because of that process. Then he didn't come out for some time. But next he tried action, he came out and started. Those people who actually support the community are Buddhist priests only by name. They were doing so sometimes for a second reason. Sometimes because they felt UNP will come into power, then they could get something from UNP.
Isn't it in 1960 when you took over the school, didn't you face opposition from the Buddhist Congress too? They didn't want their schools taken over. When you took over the schools, nationalized schools, what was the attitude of the Buddhist Congress?
Buddhist Congress, I don't think they opposed it.
But didn't they oppose the taking over of BTS schools? Some people seem to have opposed that, no? Not only the Catholics.
Yeah, some people opposed taking over BTS schools. Some people opposed it. But you couldn't do it. You can't take over the, make a distinction between BTS schools and other schools. You take over all the schools. But personally, I was opposed to that.
What?
Taking over the schools.
Right.
Because the denominator school had rendered very great service in this country. Very great service. You see, for a long time, there was a very healthy rivalry between the Royal College and the St. Thomas College. Both in sports and western education matters. So Mr. Bandaranaike himself was St. Thomas man. So was P.S. Hiranayake. So it's that the same man today. You see, and a number of others who are from other schools. So that, without touching any other thing, I thought in the education field also, there must be a certain amount of competition. So, some of the schools that were existing at that country were being supported by the people. Even the building the people supported, they said it's our school. But when the government took it over, it was anti-schooling. And government school. So today, the government is costing the government an enormous amount of money to upkeep the school. Take the BTS for instance. I was there in my neighborhood, BTS for 3 years. I know it.
When was that?
That was in 1947, 48, 49. I was telling you. Not more than 10% of the schools had good buildings, had decent buildings. All their own land. All the other buildings were like cattle sheds, buildings, and these buildings were coming up with the assistance of the local people gradually. When I became general manager, that's what I used to do. I went around all over, you see, and I could see your school. Your children attend this school, not my children. And you must have a decent school for them, decent building for your children to receive education and all that. And the people started coming up, you see. Same thing with the Catholic school, same thing with the Catholic English school. Their people become schools. Now, today, the government has put this hand in it, and the people expect the government to do everything. That is the mentality of the people is such, you see. The people expect the government to do everything.
So, when this was proposed in the cabinet, did you oppose it?
I opposed it.
Uh-huh. Anybody else opposed it?
This Felix Das opposed it. But his opposition was rather weak. Because he said, I'm a Christian. They are also Christian business. Came and he said, my trouble is that.
What were the arguments used by those who were in favor of taking over?
In favor of that the a lot of money is being made by the reorganized school. The equipment grant and or something, they force lower grade to take. That's one thing. And the other thing is that some schools were guilty of cross-sectionalization, that is, converting Buddhist children into Christian schools. Mm-hmm. And that two. And three, some people said there must be one central party. The school education must be carried on according to the school regulation. But it's just one central authority. Those are the things that they are going to say. But I really couldn't accept any of those things. To prevent the conversion of children, there are other ways of doing it rather than taking over the schools. Because one thing is, there I agree with what the Roman Catholic said. I also believe in it. Every child has got to have a religious environment in the education department. Buddhist child must be taught in a Buddhist environment. Catholic child environment. I mean, they feel that, you see. Mm-hmm. I think that my religion, the Papa thing, but similarly, they must be, they are entitled to teach the same thing as their religion, you see. So they feel our children must be taught, it must receive the religion in the Catholic environment. I mean, you can't change it against that. Mm-hmm. I can't change it. You see. So, one of the most important things that a child should have a religious environment. And Buddhist school and the government school cannot give that. With that environment, you see, which can be provided only by your denomination school to which belongs that particular denomination.
Do you think that when cabinets have been formed and ministries are organized,
yes,
according to your experience in 56 and in 1960, that those who form these ministries, those who put these departments into various ministries,
yes,
did not take administrative techniques into account, namely that you mustn't have too much in your hands, that certain departments are interrelated and therefore they must be in the same ministry, mm-hmm, that to have X, Department X and Department A, mm-hmm, sometimes they don't go together, but yet they put together because it suits somebody. So that they haven't taken all these rational factors into account in forming, in cutting up ministries.
I don't think so. I don't think so. Open for failed cabinet. Certainly not the 1960 government. 1960 government now, as I told you, one minister got as much as 22 or 23 departments. Top heavy. And that's not, he could do nothing. What can he do?
And this cultural affairs department, for instance, seems to have been kicked around from one ministry
to the other. So has the social services. Labor and social services went together once. Then health and social services went together once.
This would seem to be done according to personal considerations and the cutting up of departments.
Hmm.
Would seem to be done according to personal wishes and personal factors rather than...
That's what happened.
In 1960, 61, 62, 63, to what extent did Mrs. Bandaranaike rely on Felix Das and N.Q. Das?
I mean, she relied on N.Q. Das quite a lot to the very end. Felix Das also, she relied on him, during the first 2 or 3 years, she relied on him quite a lot. Do a cup of tea?
Yes,
please. I'll get the whole afternoon for you.
In 1959,
yes,
just before the assassination,
yes,
did you feel that the position of the SLSP was weakening and that you were losing popularity?
Yes. Yeah. And because this happened in 1956, September. In 1959 May, I went to England to lead a deputation of the parliamentary deputation as guest of the Parliamentary Association England. So, at that, when I left the place, there was a fair amount of trouble here. You see? Because...
Now, you had to go between the Prime Minister and these people like a shuttlecock.
Yeah.
And
from the front Prime Minister to his people. Then I discussed
that, that is at R.G. Sennaika's house.
R.G. Sennaika's house. Then I get some information on them. Well, then as the Prime Minister said, well, hey, don't tell them anything. Try to get anything you can from them. So I was able to arrange this meeting. Mr. Bandaranaik at that time.
Meeting at 7 o'clock in the night?
In the night.
Where?
At Mr. Bandaranaik's place. I was able to arrange. Then he saw this case. Before that, he was trying to meet the case. Then we were suggested certain things. Now what is going to be done to those people said, if you think we are going to be there, we are not going to be the committee. Please leave us out sometimes and we are going. Mr. Bandaranaik's trouble was, he did not want to have a break in the cabinet. He did not want to ask Tribunal to get out. So he suggested a way. I will make a Saturday reshuffle in the cabinet. In that reshuffle, I take off one department from Philip. Philip had agriculture and
cooperatives. Cooperatives.
Something. Cooperatives or fisheries. One of the things. To pay the fisherman. Then he said, he told me, maybe to give up appearances, I'm going to take excise from you. I said, all right, did it. And give it over to the industry, the trade industry. And by that he made a reshuffle. Then it came to the question of Mrs. Vijayavadana. Mr. Bandaranaik was adamant. She must get out of the cabinet. I'm not prepared to have her in the cabinet.
I thought she was in Standard Service as a group.
She was in Standard Service as a group, yes. It is in the group he said that. Because I told you that. See? He said, we are not going to, I'm not going to have one.
Why?
Because, I come to that later. Then, this is, people like, yes, Tanisha something. That you have been working with her all along. We can't have the rounds and all that. Then, visitors and all that. Then that is tells you a relegated representative in the local government, in the local government. From health to the local government. And Mr. Bandaranaik expected to resign. But he didn't. Then this was announced.
See, he changed his ministry, his department, knowing very well that Philip would resign.
See, he did it. Philip might resign. But then he said, he should resign. Philip and William should have both resigned. Then it came to the question of Ilangaratna. Ilangaratna was having the Labour Ministry. So that was the time when I had to give up Home Affairs and take over the Ministry of Health, vacated by Mrs. Vijayavadana, Mr. Bandaranaik said, AP, Mrs. Vijayavadana has made a complete mess of health. You have to bring in Ayurveda and things like that. She has antagonized everybody. Antagonized W. Gundaratna, antagonized this man, W. Gundaratna. We had to fight with him, send him to Burma. You see, and antagonize the man who gave the advice on Ayurveda from India, Shiva Sharma, all these people. Now you will have to take up health and bring order. And let this man take up
from the role of that. Because he wanted the popularity.
Yeah, he wanted to be with the people. That is how that happened.
So I was wondering whether he wanted to get rid of Mrs. Vijayavadana.
Yes.
Because she was... a bit of a scandal because, you know,
There was another reason. So this is strictly confidential, but it's generally known.
Yes.
Let's keep it confidential. You see, there were at one stage, in 1959 itself, one stage when somebody had written some scurrilous verses against Mrs. Vijayavadana. You see? And they sent these verses by post to some of us, most of us, And they kept a pile of these things right on the Patta, you know, the Goti junction. They kept a pile of these things with a stone on it and said, please take one. And the, even the name of the thinker was Babihira was given, the bogus name, not given there. So Mitushi Devadana, and there are all kinds of charges on the meeting him, sir, and coupling her with Uttarakita and various other people. Mitushi Devadana got annoyed over this, took this to Mr. Bandarnayaka and told him, you must take action on this. So, Mr. Bandarnayaka said, Mr. Vijayavadana, if anything is said against me in your capacity of interest, help, then I can ask the police to take action. But see, these are all against it personally. How can I know? Then Mr. Bandarnayaka, the man is fond of a joke. Even if he's picked other man below that, but and he said, but really, you know, I mean, some of this is true. And what did he do? He wrote, he's a good person. Can you present again?
End of interview with A.P. Jayasurya on the 15th of January 1968.